Welcome to episode one of the Eat the Evidence podcast, a show for cake and cookie decorators and sugar artists of all kinds. Today, I'm joined by Dawn Parrott for a great big talk about everything from cake shows to pastillage to revealing the true secret behind the little notch on your piping couplers. I'll play a short interview from the Austin show featuring Kyla Myers about the work that goes into a show of that scale, and Mark DeGrosier has some encouraging words to get you through your decorating. So whether you're deep in decorating right now, up to your elbows in washing dishes, driving your latest masterpiece to the client, or just taking some downtime after all of that, it's time to get the support and understanding you deserve. Let's go! So, this is the first official full episode. You may have heard the pilot I did a few weeks ago, which is where I pretty much learned how to use all of the equipment and editing software and picked music and all of that. But now, here we go with a full and proper show. I meant to have this episode out last week because my goal is to put out one every other Thursday. I know a lot of you are doing your weekend deadline decorating on Thursdays, so I want to give you something fresh to listen to as often as I can. For now, I'm aiming for every other week because I still have a small child at home for half days. But we just got confirmation that she'll be going to full-time school just up the street starting in September. So yeah, that'll mean a lot more time to get these done. Because aside from the obvious hassles any of us have when trying to get work done with little kids in the home, they're definitely not good at being quiet when you need to do recording. Which is why this episode is coming out now instead of last week, because here in the UK, the Easter break is almost 2.5 weeks long. And there was just no way I was going to get an episode done when my kids were home. Right. So the schedule going forward will be every other Thursday, except when I can't due to holidays or family obligations or travel. But I'm really hoping that more and more of that travel will be to actual cake shows. We're right in the thick of cake show season right now, so I was super grateful to today's guest, Dawn Parrott, for squeezing me in for a chat in her brief time at home between a pile of major international trips. And I've got other folks keen to join me on the show, but they're just so swamped with cake shows right now that we haven't been able to schedule them on yet. But there will be a lot of fun interviews coming over the summer, so keep tuning in. And if there's anybody you want to hear on the show, including yourself, be sure to comment on the Facebook page to let me and them know that you want to hear from them. And definitely, please tell your friends about the show, share it on Facebook, cake message boards, and anywhere else you like. Let's build up a mutually supportive, fun podcast community together so we all have something to listen to while getting our decorating work done. With me now is one of the nicest and most talented people I've ever had the privilege to meet in the cake decorating world, a lady gifted in fabulous cake design, in chocolate, in pastry, and someone I like to call the Royal Icing Whisperer because she can make royal do amazing things like nobody else. She's a teacher, a judge, she does Facebook Live videos demonstrating all of her rock star skills, and she's even got her own brand of royal icing. She is, of course, the one and only Dawn Parrott. Welcome, Dawn.
Hey, thanks for having me, Kim.
How's it going?
Great, great. We're in the middle of a thunderstorm, but it's good.
Yeah, don't die. We don't have time. That is my motto for everything lately.
No, it just makes the royal dry a little bit slower.
Oh, yeah, I bet. So you've been very busy lately.
I have. It's one trip after another. I actually have home for 12 days before I head out for another month. So, yeah, it's busy.
That is a long time away.
It's going to be, yes. I'm trying to psych myself up for it.
So what exciting places have you been and where are you going?
Let's see. I just got back from Las Vegas. I teach out there at a cake shop called Sweet House, usually about 3 to 4 times a year, depending on the year. Then I'm going to be heading to Miami to SoFlo, which I'm super excited about, where I'm teaching 2 classes and judging. That's going to be the end of this month, the 26th, 27th, 28th. Then I drive back and I go straight to San Antonio for the Frosting Creators Royal Affair Cake Show. And I literally come back on the evening of the 6th. I fly out on the 7th to Australia to the Brisbane Acadia Cake Show, and I'm going to be out in Australia for, I think, about 15 days. And then I finally get to come home for a visit.
Before heading out again, probably somewhere else?
Yes, the New York Cake Show, the first weekend in June.
Does your family even know who you are anymore?
No, well, sometimes I think I'm the visiting mom.
But do you ply them with cake?
No, after like about 15, 16 years of cake, nobody really is interested in my house and cake anymore.
Really? Because I obviously have much smaller children, and I had kids in here decorating today, and they are highly interested.
Oh, yeah. No, we've lost that part now. It's like, oh, no, thank you.
Do you know what I did today? I used the flour nail for the first time today.
Oh, and how'd it go?
I made a beautiful cabbage. Several beautiful cabbages. They were rose adjacent.
Okay.
Part of it is it was buttercream, and so I was decorating with my 11-year-old and my 3-year-old and a friend and her 6.5-year-old.
Wow.
So when I made the buttercream, I know with my hot hands I have to make it super stiff because I'm going to melt it.
Yes.
But I also knew I was. Really, this was not about me today. This was about the kids and my friend, who's not, you know, a professional cake decorator or anything. I mean, I think she's held a piping bag before, but she's never done the flowers before. She'd never seen the nail at all.
Okay.
And so I brought them out, and I had my buttercream was thinner than I would have normally done, so they could actually get it out of the bag. But that meant as soon as I picked up the bag, it was starting to get really schlumpy. So I've watched all these YouTube videos, and I've watched your videos and your lives, and so I understand, like, in either royal or in buttercream, like, the idea with the rose tip, you know, that you're going up and over, and you're overlapping, and you make your central bed. Like, I've watched this, but to actually do it for the first time, it's like, wow, this just went all to the side.
It's actually, believe it or not, though, it's actually harder with buttercream than it is with royal. Because royal tends to hold its stiffness. You can't melt it as easy as you can your buttercream, so it is a lot easier in royal. So that, you know, don't take that to heart, because it definitely, you're going to be super fast with buttercream. You need super stiff icing with buttercream, so maybe the next time you try it in royal, you may find it quite a bit easier to work with.
I should get cookies with the kids and do royal. I mean, I've done that before. Robin likes, my 3-year-old likes to hold a bag in each hand, like she's like some kind of mega pro that she can ice 2 cookies at once. I mean, as long as you don't care that half of it's not on the cookie, it's fine. But I could see that, but I was showing them what I've seen you talk about in your lives about turning the nail and not turning the bag. No, we were all turning the bag, and our petals had so many gaps. I'm sorry.
It just comes with practice. As I said on the live, I mean, it took me a long time to figure it out, and it's something you've got to ingrain in yourself, and it's going to take a little practice, but it will click. And once it clicks, you got it. So it just takes trying it a few times.
Yeah, and I could see that. I mean, as I was doing it, my first one just sort of fell to the side. And then my second one, I forgot to put the parchment on the nail.
Done that, been there.
And then I just smeared that on the cupcake. And then the third one, we all agreed, looked rose-ish, you know. And this, in the pilot episode, I have an interview with Nick Lodge saying about how when you first try to pipe flowers, your first one looks like a cabbage. And I'm like, oh my God, he's not kidding. This totally looks like a cabbage. I made a beautiful cabbage. Beautiful purple cabbage.
That's funny. I bet it wasn't a cabbage, but that's okay.
I could post, no one's eaten it yet. I could post a picture. But, you know, the 6.5-year-old thought it was beautiful. And I also broke out, I've got, you know, the Russian piping tips. And the kids just love those. Have you ever tried royal in those things?
I know people have. I honestly don't even own a set, and I've never tried them. You know me, I like to do things the hard and difficult way. So they're just not something that ever appealed to me. So I haven't even put my fingers on one yet.
Yeah, they're definitely not what I would think of as, certainly not competition work. I mean, maybe someone could come up with a creative use, but really they're for slapping as much decorative icing on a cupcake in as little time with as little concern for the final result as possible.
Well, I mean, they're definitely made for production work, and they have their place for sure. Like I said, but I don't sell cakes and stuff anymore, so I never felt the need to. I keep telling Josh or John Russell, he's always got them at the shows. I'm like, yeah, I have to play with those. He keeps telling me to come over, and of course, you know how it is in a show. before you know it, the show is over. Mm-hmm. And I just never get time to get over to see them. But I mean, I've seen some beautiful stuff done with them. I'm not knocking them. They're great. I just personally never saw a use that I would have for it.
No, because you can, I mean, in the time it takes to load, because it's huge, man. These things are huge. And where you've cut your bag has to be a different size. And I'm finding, like, with the cheap disposable bags that I like to use with kids, that it pushes the tip out just because of the pressure. So then you need a coupler. And I've tried 3 different couplers coming in from China to find one that, you know, there's more hassle to it than is worth it for someone like you who can just make the flour.
Right. Yeah. But like I said, I definitely see the appeal to them. And I like a lot of the stuff that people are doing with them. Like, so I just honestly haven't even touched one. So.
Yeah, the reason I could cost justify this to myself was we're having a bake sale in 2 days. Can you give us 36 cupcakes?
Right. Yeah.
And it's like, okay, I will make 3 colors of buttercream. I'll do that striping in the bag thing. I look at that and I'm like, this is actually fairly sloppy. It's certainly not something I would ever put in front of the cake god's eyes. Mike McCary would never, I would never let, you know, Nick Lodge see these cupcakes. But the moms at the bake sale for the nursery school, they think they're so pretty.
And that's what matters.
Know your audience.
Exactly.
Well, when, you know, this is a thing I have all the time when I'm competing because I compete more than I sell, I almost never sell. I often have to remind myself, this is not a competition cake. I don't have to be perfect today. Do you have that problem?
Well, I mean, like you, I haven't sold cakes now in almost 9 years, and I actually only compete once a year ever anymore. I pretty much judge all the show. But when I was selling cakes, yeah, you do have to reel it back a little bit and say, you know what? I only charge this amount for the cake. You kind of got to tone it back and not try to be perfectionist. Remember that your time is money. It is a bit harder to get your brain back to that thought process. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you definitely do have to teach yourself time management. And if you're doing this for sale, which is a big problem for a lot of people, is they don't know their time versus their skill sets. And you know, you got to remember the more time you put into it, the less money you technically make. So yeah, you do have to bring yourself back in for sure.
Yeah, it is hard to remember. Obviously, you want to please your client, but your client probably is not Nick Lodge. your client is probably not someone who knows, like you were talking about in your Facebook live recently, about the drop tip. I tried one of those for the first time today, too. I put that drop. I have one. I've never used it before. And the girls loved it. Oh, it was so much fun. I mean, they were making weird ribbony flowers, all big mess. But you were talking about being able to tell as a judge the difference between that or actually piping out the petals.
Right. Yeah, for sure. I mean, you can definitely see it and read it, but you know, those tips are meant for, like we said earlier, it is for something more like what you would do for a cake order versus a competition. Because there isn't the natural break in the petals that you would see when you pipe one petal at a time. So they are, you can definitely see them. You'll notice that with the actual drop flower tip, they're all going to be the exact same size, the same pressure. It's going to be a lot better and a lot more even, where when you look at the ones that are made individually, they're definitely different. You can definitely see the difference between the two. I mean, once you have a trained eye to look for it, but they are a great tool to have. And I don't know if you know this about those drop flower tips. Have you ever noticed the difference between couplers? Wilton has the couplers that have that little piece cut out of it. Do you know what I'm talking about?
All my couplers look the same.
Have you ever seen the ones that have a little notch out of it?
No.
Okay, they're by Wilton, and I think you can still get them by other companies. And for the longest time, I never knew this, but this is a little tip for anyone who does have the couplers that have the little notch out of the side. It's actually like literally, I don't know, maybe a quarter inch by close to a half an inch down. It's actually got a hole in the side. It's actually for those drop flower tips, because that little metal piece inside, what happens is you put the tip on and then you put on your coupler ring, and when you twist it, the actual piece of metal inside gets locked in that little notch that's cut out, so your tip doesn't twist while you twist your hand.
I noticed the piece of metal inside, obviously, because I'm sure that's going to be fun to clean, but I didn't even notice it sticking out the side. I'm going to have to go have a look.
Yeah, and it's not outside, it's inside.
Right, like, oh, I see, okay.
It's not inside the tip, but when you put your coupler on, you know, it fits above the coupler. that little cutout that's there, that when
Oh,
you
I
put on your
see.
coat ring, if once it turns and it gets then gets itself stuck into that little slot so that the tip does not turn, so it doesn't affect your flowers. Without that little notch, depending on your pressure, the tip could continuously spin, and if the tip spins, you won't get such a pretty drop flower.
Right, okay, no, I know what the notch you mean. I thought you meant in the outer ring. You mean on the inner sleeve. Yes, I know the notch you mean. Oh, okay, yeah, I never knew what those were.
That's why those couplers were made.
Oh, I just assumed that was some kind of plastic or pressure management.
No, they're made for those tips that have the little metal spikes inside.
Well, there you go. I've learned so much. I learned from you. I had no idea until you mentioned it in your Facebook the other day that there are right-handed and left-handed tips, and that makes entire sense.
Yeah, and only by PME. I think they're the only ones that actually have them. But yeah, no, Wilton, no, it's a lie. Wilton does have a couple that they considered left and right, but they don't name them L and R. They only have one or two, I think. But I know PME has a few of them that are that way. And like you said, it does make complete sense. At first, I didn't think so, but then once I actually tried using a right-handed one, it was an upside-down curve when I piped, so it made all my flowers close up.
Right, because you're left-handed, right?
Yes, I'm left-handed.
Yeah, I could see Robin's left-handed and really enjoys the cake things, and I was really paying attention when you were saying that thing. Oh, I'm going to have all the left-handed things in here.
I mean, I can pretty much decorate left and right because when I worked at the bakery, I had to do right-handed borders to match all the other stuff. You know, when we did, especially on wedding cakes. Funny story was, I got called into the owner's office one day, and he says, "I want you to look at something." I'm like, "Sure." So he started showing me all the pictures from the wedding deliveries, and I'm like, "Oh, they turned out great." He goes, "Take a closer look," and I kept looking. I didn't know what he was talking about. Well, we used to work on the cakes in the bakery, and we would only ever take three stacked. Anything bigger than three, we stacked on site and bordered. Well, I didn't used to work on the Saturday. So the other head decorator, she would do all the deliveries. Well, I could do, and she and I, like, she could put a cake down, I could pick it up and finish it. Like, we worked the same. The difference was I'm left-handed, she's right-handed. So I started looking at the pictures of these cakes, and I realized, oh, it was like a five-tiered cake. It was a left-handed border, left-handed border, left-handed border, right-handed border, right-handed border, all the same cake. As you said, someone who's not a decorator probably never would have noticed it. However, we noticed it because they were going different directions. So I had to teach myself to make sure I did everything right-handed so that we never had that issue anymore.
I actually probably myself would have noticed that. Everyone in this household is slightly obsessed with symmetry.
Oh, too funny. The sizes were the same. Everything was the same.
Yeah.
It's just the direction they went in. Like I said, to someone who does cakes, you might notice it. But the average person, like, you would never notice it because the sizes were the same. The tip was the same. It's just that she went towards her right. I go towards my left when I do borders. So.
Yeah, I guess I'm thinking about it. Like I've told you before, I've piped a shell border sort of badly kind of once. Like, again, it's one of these, I understand how you're supposed to sort of have to do it, and I tried it once, I'm like, wow, that was not good. So, but I understand, right now I'm moving my hand and going, yeah, I'm going to the right, yeah.
Yep, yep. So like I said, I just had to teach myself to, so I can't, so which in the long run was great, because now as an instructor, when I demo, I can actually turn it, like, flip my brain into right-handed mode. I still use my left hand, but I can show them how to do it right-handed versus, because I've noticed a lot of times when I forget to do that, I'll go sit down and people are struggling and I watch them working and I realize, oh my gosh, they're trying to do it left-handed and they're just going the wrong direction. So I'll be like, oh, just try it this way. And then it clicks. So I, you know, in the long run, it was something that was really good for me because by teaching myself to be able to flip it over to a right-handed mode is important, especially when you're trying to teach other people the same kind of stuff.
But your left-handed students must love you.
Oh, they do. And I tell people when I demo, I ask if there's anybody left-handed. I say, okay, all you left-handed people are going to come stand behind me for the demo. And all the right-handed people stand across from me. So that way they're looking at it right-handed. And then the left-handed people are getting it left-handed.
See,
so it's definitely a bonus for those that are left-handed and get to take classes from a left-handed instructor for sure.
Yeah, and you're the genius who recognized that.
That there's two different things. Well, I always recognize it. I try to, but
that's part of your amazing instructor ability is understanding that if the people behind you will see you from your perspective.
Right. Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, you know, just try to think of it looking at them, looking at it the way I would look at things. Because you can remember, I taught myself in books and magazines for pretty much 95% of what I do. And so I never had anybody to watch. And then the times that I did see people do things, I was always seeing them right-handed, which was, you know, luckily I've done a lot of crafts. My parents, my mother owned a ceramic business growing up. So we did ceramics our whole teenage life. And my dad was very artistic and stuff, but I was always watching it through right-handed. So when I learned to knit and crochet and cross-stitch, and everybody was right-handed. So I've learned early on to flip things in my brain.
Right.
So I was kind of blessed in that sense that it helped me apply that always to cake. I can watch something, but then I've got to go sit down and let it kind of flip backwards in my head and say, oh, if I try it this way, this might work for me. So, so like I said, hopefully it's a good advantage to, especially those people who struggle and can't do the natural flipping in their own head. They get a little bit of a bonus when they have a left-handed teacher.
That is very cool.
Yeah.
And speaking of going back into how you started into this, I learned recently that you and I share an origin story in coming into cake. So how did you come into cake then?
Well, being from Canada, my husband, started to work in the U.S. And when we first come down, as you know, you're not allowed to work as a spouse. And so I just happened to be in a craft store and saw that Wilton course kit that they sell. And my dad and my stepmom used to do cakes for like family and friends when I was little. And I just remember thinking, you know what, that'd be kind of cool. I should like learn to do some of this stuff and then make cool cakes for my kids. And literally that's how it started. I got that course one kit and I worked it. And then I went and bought the second one. And then I just started buying books and magazines from there and kind of kept working on it until I was getting comfortable. And yeah, so then the rest they say is history. Then competition kind of fell in my lap. When I was working at that bakery, there was a local cake club that said, hey, we're having a competition. You should enter something. And I was like, are you crazy? Mm-hmm. but I did enter and it was a lot of fun. That's where I met Brahman Weber. And she was like, we're having a show in a month down in Austin. You should enter. And I was like, are you crazy? And then my second show ever was down in Austin. And none other than Carrie Vincent was my judge.
Wow.
Talk about nerve-wracking.
A little bit.
It was crazy.
And then you've won in Oklahoma, right?
Yes, I won in 2014.
I mean, that is some big props right there.
Well, thank you. It's quite the show to win, no question. I mean, by the time I won, I think that was I'm not sure if it was my ninth year or my 10th year competing in the Grand National. And that's, I mean, the best of the best. I mean, you go there, you bring it. You better bring it and bring it well. And, I love going there for that reason because it pushes me every time I go to work harder and to try something new and be better. It's, like I said, I personally love it. Some people get nervous and they're always afraid of it, but it's a cake show like every other cake show, just that you know that people, when they go, they're going to bring their best to that show.
Yeah, I mean, I never got around to going. Obviously, I left the country. It was sort of in my head when we first moved to Austin, and I said to my husband, oh, you know, there's that Oklahoma show we've seen on the TV that maybe I should, when my eldest at the time was just 2.5, and I thought, well, you know, when she's stable, maybe I could go. But then when I needed to make her 3-year-old birthday cake, I wanted to make Fraggle Rock, and I wanted to make those doozer sticks out of sugar. And this is before you could go onto YouTube and find, you know, information on anything to do with cake. Now, if you type something into YouTube, someone's done at least a halfway decent video on it. Sometimes you can find amazing videos. But right. Back then, there was nothing like that. I mean, you couldn't find any of that information. And so I was thinking, well, should I take a class? I can't really cost justify a class for my kid's cake. I'm just like this low-level person who's never done anything. And then I found out, oh, there's a cake club in town. I should join it. And the first day I went, it ended up being the night that Kyla Myers became the president. And,
awesome.
And she said, and now we're signing up volunteers for a cake show. And I thought, there's a cake show? I guess I could help out a little bit.
And look at you.
yeah, kind of ate my life. And now I'm Kyla's loyal minion. And when she says jump, I say, well, I can't jump because I have screws holding my foot together, but may I roll to you, ma'am?
That's awesome.
And in fact, I did the show. The first year I did the show, I had the big black boot on and I just limped my way through the whole show. that was the 2009 year. That was the music was the theme.
Now, was that when it was back in the building that had the flea market?
Yeah.
Or was it still at the school? Okay, so yeah, you didn't go when it was at the school.
No, yeah. When I started, it was at the North Austin Event Center, which is the
awesome.
Yeah, the flea market weirdness. That was that whole place.
Right, right. Now, they've had, that's become quite the show. It's grown so much. Like I said, I went to the very first one and been, I think I've only missed two ever. One because I had a foot surgery, and two because of that whole year where there was two cake shows in the same weekend. But those are the only two I've missed out of all the years that show has been running. So it's one of those ones I generally catch every year. I love going. It's nice and close for us. And, you know, they just do such a good job, and they work so hard at that show. It's actually a joy to go there.
Yeah, we definitely, there's hard work. I have audio I should play later in this episode of Kyla and I on the Friday. I think it's the Friday morning, because I was playing with my new microphone, and I was like, I stay at her house when I come out there now, and we were driving out there, and I was testing my microphone, and I sort of fake interviewed her about what all the things that we had to do. Just that off the top of our head, I said, okay, we're driving, we're going to be safe while we're driving, but how many things can we name that we have to do? Go. And it's just like us naming, there's this and there's that, and oh, that other thing.
You should play that.
Okay, I'm just going to pause the conversation right there for a second and take Dawn's advice and switch over to the clip I have of Kyla and I in the car right before the Austin Cake Show. So we're on our way to the Austin show, and everything is taken care of. When we get there, you can put your feet up and relax, right, Kyla?
Yeah, right.
Okay, so let's think off the top of our heads while you're driving. So we're being super safe right now. How many things can we name that we have to get done today?
Well, we have to make sure all of the contestant packages are ready. We have to organize all the t-shirts, and that's not just for the volunteers, but also the members, the VIPs, and the people who just walk in off the street. Let's see, we need to figure out our processes for competitor registration before they get in the door at 5:00. We have to get all the pipe and draping and all of that stuff up. And the vendors start coming in at 2, I think, so we have to be all prepped for the vendors. That's just a few things off the top of my head.
Yeah, I got to prep kid class supplies today. We got to get all the other class supplies counted out. We got to get that stuff off a truck. We've got to get all these paperwork and packages and supplies. This is a busy day.
Yeah, and on top of that, we have 45 volunteers in today, so we need to make sure that we feed them lunch, that we have jobs for them to do all day. Managing people and getting all of our stuff together.
Wait, now are you telling me that every person who comes in doesn't know exactly what they need to do and can just go and do it completely unhandled?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Every year we have a new bunch, and sometimes, of course, returning volunteers. But we have a bunch of new volunteers who may have never stepped inside a show, may not know what the show is about. And so we have to find jobs for them to do and train them how to do it.
Right, and they're eager and good people, but there's this milling around period where all these people want to do something, and the volunteer manager has to work their butt off trying to figure out where to send all these people.
Yeah, and you know, Kyla is not a morning person. So trying to figure out jobs for everybody, 45 people at, 9 a.m. when I'm not at my best is not a good scenario.
But hopefully someone's brought you an unnamed brand of chocolate.
Yeah, the statement is that if Kyla is being not so nice, we give her a candy bar.
Yeah, because that'll fix everything. Candy bars fix everything at the sugar show.
Well, you know, for the little diabetic, too.
Yep. All right, we'll check in further and see how things are going in the middle of the day. When I see you pulling your lovely blue hair out, it'll be time for another interview. How does that sound?
Great. When I get my headset on, I'll be the short one with the blue hair and the headset. Yay!
Yay! Cake Nexus!
And now, back to the conversation with Dawn.
I think people don't understand what goes in behind the scenes of cake shows, like what it takes to put a cake show on. It's phenomenal, the amount of work that those shows take.
It is. I had done like various nonprofit eventy things before, but it's a whole different level, particularly at that size. I've done volunteering for smaller stuff here, And even that's a lot of work. But then in the, just the year, you finish the show and now you're planning the next thing. There's like no rest for the wicked on these.
No, that's true. There's not, because literally, like you said, usually it'll take a day or two, and then you're starting to try to get your donations and all your prizes and all the stuff for the next year, literally a couple days later. I mean, you start planning, you're booking your space, you have to get your tables, your table coverings. I mean, it is so much work that, like I said, it's shocking once people realize exactly what's involved in doing all of it.
Which is why I would encourage anyone who particularly frequents a show to go volunteer, because even if you're coming to the Austin show, even if you're traveling in, I mean, you're one of our judges, you're volunteering judging time. But like other people, if they're just coming, they can, you know, have fun at the show for 90% of it. But if you can give an hour here, an hour there, it really makes such a huge difference.
It really does. But also, it also helps the other volunteers, because you have some volunteers who end up volunteering the entire show away and they don't even get to see it. You know, like you said, if everybody could give like an hour here, an hour there and spread it out, then people just aren't so exhausted and so tired. But it's also great for them to see how much work goes into it.
Yeah, we've definitely noticed that when we get new volunteers, they kind of tend to fall into one of two categories. They either look at the amount of work, or they get a taste of the amount of work and go, wow, that's a lot of work, I can't handle that. And sometimes for very good reasons, like I'm not disparaging that at all. Sometimes there's physical issues, or they've got small children themselves, or you know, they're teaching too many of their own classes or whatever. But then we get the other person who's like, that's a lot of work, and here are the things I'd like to fix. Can I be a committee head? And we will have you, yes.
Right, in a heartbeat.
Yeah. And then those people end up moving out of town. And it's not just me. We've had a few really great people who come in and are there for a couple of years. I mean, that's partly the Austin economy is just like that. And we are very happy now that they're at another show, but there's a little bit like, they were with our show.
Right, I know, it's crazy. And it's hard, but people do move around a lot. In this industry, it's natural that people do move around, or they have their own businesses and they can't do it every day. So, but yeah, like I said, if anyone's listening and you go to those shows, I mean, contact the directors and see if there's anything, you know, they possibly might need help with. You might be surprised at how much easier that's just going to facilitate the whole show.
Yeah, and I'm so used to doing that. I mean, because I've, you know, had done the San Antonio show when it was still a small day of sharing when I still lived there. You know, I would come and help out for an hour at the beginning or at the end or whatever. And sometimes they recovered and sometimes they weren't. But just even telling someone, hey, do you need some help, it makes them feel valued as a volunteer. But yeah, I mean, I would love to start going to more shows. I know you're going to this one in Brisbane. That would be awesome to just be able to go to Australia. I know there's a small German show that people have talked about. I would love to go to that.
There's a couple of big German shows.
Oh, are there big ones?
There's one I know that was a few years ago Peggy went to, and it was a huge show.
Oh, well, maybe that's another one. Because someone was just telling me that they went to one, and it was like a one-room small thing. But I'm sure there are lots is the thing.
Exactly. That's just it. I'm sure there are too.
What we really need is a teleporter, so not we'd have to fly.
Wouldn't that be nice?
I know, because
looking forward to that flight.
Carrying competition pieces through airports is no joy.
No, not a lot of fun at all.
No, I didn't mind driving it so much. But I think I told you once about having Wolverine in the back of the truck.
Yeah. Watching you while you were driving.
Watching me while I was driving slowly up the Mopac, because it was traffic, and which was fine because then, you know, mostly I'm going at a slow, steady pace. You kind of like traffic when you're delivering a cake, as long as it's steady. It's when someone cuts you off and I'm thinking, I do have a man with claws in here who will cut you.
Look out for my buddy.
Look out for my buddy. Well, and because I'd had him turn so that, like, he was, every time I look in the rear view mirror, I was just seeing his eyes. Like, it was like a bad, you know, cheesy movie that I could just see his eyes looking at me. And I could see those pastillage claws flexing. And I was so afraid because I'd never worked with pastillage before. And again, this was a long time ago. And I found one recipe on the internet, and it had vinegar in it, and it was very temperamental. So,
yes,
but I think you have pastillage recipes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a, it's not necessarily my recipes, but I do have a couple that I like. One is particularly, it's just gelatin based, so it tends to be a little bit more forgiving. That's from a couple in Colombia, but Il Nader has one in his Pastillas and Sugar book. It's probably my favorite one. Like I said, it just reminds me, and I can always get those to you, and you can share those out as well.
Yeah, I can definitely put those in the show notes, because the most recent time I did pastillage, it was for my NEC piece, and I needed to make the walls, and so I bought, the cake decorating company here sells a bag, I think maybe a Squire's bag that I bought from them. But even then, when I bought it, the bag of, like I said, it's a dry mix, I asked, how far does this go? And nobody right. knew. So I ended up, when I made the bag up, I rolled it out on the mat that I bought from them as well. The one that, what's it called? The sweet cut mat that's got the green one that's got, like, it looks like a quilter's mat.
Okay.
Yeah, and so I rolled it out thin on that so that I could take a picture to send it to them to say, this is how far one bag goes, like rolled to this, you know, this thickness. So I don't actually never went back to see if they put it on their website, but yeah, because otherwise you look at a bag of mix and you're like, well, I need to make a wall this big. Does that make a wall this big?
Exactly. Yeah, it's hard. And also it's hard too, because everyone's going to roll to a different thickness and a different, and you may make it slightly different consistency. So the yields are a little bit off on those too. And it comes down to like what you said, you have to take it home and kind of work it out as for what you need. But generally you can, I mean, you know what's going in there, how much it weighs, so it can kind of give you an idea of what you're going to need. I always just make plenty extra. Half the time I make pastillage, I end up with tons thrown in the garbage. But
does it not freeze?
I've never frozen it, personally. I'm not sure how that would react. Yeah. I just tend to throw it out because, you know, it tends to get hard pretty fast. But I was talking about pastillage glue. Like, when you used yours, what did you assemble it with?
Royal.
Okay, I'm going to change your world.
Okay.
This is from Nader again. If you take basically a parchment cone, a paper cone, and take a little bit of your fresh pastillage and put it into the microwave where it melts, it's pipeable. So when you pipe it next to your pastillage and attach another piece of pastillage, it's an instant stick just like ice and malt.
Oh, well, and especially if there's gelatin in it, I could see it, because when I do my flexible stained glass thing, that's basically what I've created there is a recipe that's self-fusing, I call that.
Yeah, and you just use the pastillage itself, and then there's no mess. It looks the same, it dries the same, but you literally just pipe it, and it's like literally, because it hardens so fast, you don't have to be sitting there holding it, waiting and waiting and waiting.
Oh, that's genius.
It's almost like when you do chocolate, you use freeze spray, it's kind of instant like that.
Oh, that is so cool. I mean, the piece I was doing, I don't know if you saw it. I had this brick wall that was made like with 1,100 individual bricks.
Oh my God.
Because I'm nuts. I'm not okay. it was actually, you know what? It was really therapeutic. I bought a mold that made these little 1/12 size, but otherwise accurate scale bricks. And it made like 40 something at a time. And someone had told me about the Vikings show that's on Amazon. And I guess it's from TLC, but whatever. I'm watching it on Amazon here. And I just literally watched a lot of incredible violence making bricks for a month. And I just sit there and make a bunch of bricks. And then I built this wall. And it's like, so it had, you know, proper inlaid bricks. And so, and with royal between them as the grout.
Oh,
And then like it had arched windows with like a proper, you know, keyhole arch and the whole thing. And then the pastillage that I was doing was like the interior panel of the walls.
Okay.
So it didn't where I wasn't doing like, you know, delicate little, you know, on the package it showed like a little cradle or something made out of. No, I wasn't doing that. I basically made a wall panel that was then, and because I used pastillage because I knew I could dry it, sand it, and cut it. So because I also had a fireplace that penetrated the wall, like there was an outside and an inside with the brickwork.
Okay.
And so I knew if I did pastillage, I could make something that had a strip that went up one side, up over the fireplace, down the other side, and windows cut out, and not, I mean, yeah, maybe out of gum paste I could have done that, but with pastillage I could make it, like, it was fairly thick. It was not thin rolled at all. It was, I don't know, I didn't roll it to a specific thickness, but it was thinner than my rollers, those quarter inch rollers. So it was probably like 1/8 inch or something. But I could make it really thick. I knew it would dry flat. It wouldn't curl up. And so then I just basically on the back of that brick wall slathered a bunch of royal and stuck it in place.
Oh, wow. Okay, cool. That makes complete sense. Was it a Christmas one where the tree fell over?
That's the one. Yeah.
I love that piece.
Oh, thank you. I
have a lot of pictures of that piece.
I was just so happy to get that bronze. You know about what happened there, right?
No, I don't think I do.
So I was so sick at the show. I don't know if you remember. I was like dog sick. I was supposed to come demo for the cake decorating company too. And it ended up being just like that. Some other things have been messed up with that. And I was like, okay, how about we just don't? Cause I'm so sick. And I was just like the walking dead through that show. And aww. I shouldn't have been there. I should not have driven there the Thursday night. It was just not okay. And then on the Saturday morning, I didn't even want to get up out of the hotel. I was just so sick. And I hadn't slept because I was coughing all night. And I pulled myself out. I thought, I need to go see what the judging is. And I get there. And sure enough, judging cards are out. And my entry was in the back corner. That's just where the categories were. And I walked all the way through. And I'm seeing all these cards out. And I'm, you know, I knew it wasn't gold work. There was no way I was getting a gold. I'd sort of maybe hoped for a silver, but I was reasonably confident that it was at least bronze work because I'd had a bronze before. I get there and there's no card. And I'm like, what? But what? And I look, there's some other pieces around mine that were okay, but rougher, like, you know, categorically rougher pieces that had at least certificate of merit. And I didn't even have that. And I'm looking around, I'm lifting the tablecloth and just... I just slumped. I just thought, like, that's it. What? I don't even. I was so sad. I just was so depressed. So I went to the cake god. I went to Mike McCary because I knew he was there and I knew he would give me sympathy because he'd seen my piece and he'd liked it. And, you know, when Mike likes a thing, then, you know, it at least has some merit. And so I went over to his booth and I'm like, Mike, I didn't even place. And he's like, he was confused. He said, wait, what? What, the thing you brought here didn't place? And I was like, it didn't even place. And he was so nice. And he's like, you were robbed. And it should have at least said something. Did they, you know, are they offended because there was the cat licking itself? And I was like, I don't know. I'm going to line up for judging later. And then I went somewhere and to a corner. And I don't even do Facebook on my phone, but I did for the first time. I used their Wi-Fi to load up Facebook just to say on Facebook, this is my entry and it didn't even place, you guys. I'm so sad. And then I closed my phone and I went and sat at the International Theater and watched every demo. I'm like, because I'm not going to look at cakes. I'm so immature right now. If I look at other people's cakes, I'm going to be like, I hate everything. I'm so mad. Because like, and I'm not normally like that. Like I'm usually, particularly when it's my friends, I'm so happy with my friends win. I do not mind losing to, you know, better cakes or I'm not usually like that, but I was having a little temper tantrum. And I sat down and I just watched all these demos. And then at the end of the day, I dragged and I stood for an hour and a half queuing for the judging. And I met the cake duchess. She was in front of me in line. And I was talking to her about, you know, her entry and my entry. And it came out, oh, you did that. Yeah, why didn't that place? And people around me going, oh, yeah, we saw that. Why didn't that place? And I'm like, I don't know. I'm hoping a judge will tell me. And finally... Finally, a judge comes up to me and says, okay, so what's your entry number? And I said, whatever it was. And she said, oh, so you have a bronze. Congratulations. And I'm like, no, there's nothing there. And she said, well, maybe we're looking at the wrong piece. Come show me your piece. And I came over and she checked the number. And she said, oh, no, honey, you have a bronze. And I'm like, oh, really? And she's like, yeah, we'll get you another card. It must just be my way. I hugged her. I just like pounce hugged her and I'm like, I'm sick. I should not have touched the poor judge, but I'm like, thank you so much. You're my favorite judge. Oh, I'm like, now I'm gushing and every criticism they said, I'm like, yep, I know it's okay because I got a bronze. Oh yes. No, I agree. That line is not straight. That's fine. I got a bronze. I literally have the little card in my drawer beside me here. It is the best bronze I ever got.
I'm glad you got it.
You know what? I never found out. By the next morning, there was a card, and then I posted. And oh, but meanwhile, the people, you know, all my friends back in Austin who had a working internet connection, the results had been posted. The preliminary results had been posted. And so I think it was Jennifer Sherwood was desperately trying to poke me on Facebook going, Cam, you want a bronze, Cam? But I wasn't opening my phone because it was terrible Wi-Fi and I was depressed and
I was watching Avalon make bark effects. Apparently I didn't come to suck up to you with my sad, sad story of no prawns.
No, you didn't mention it at all. I remember you saying anything about that.
Well, I guess I saw you on the first day, the Friday. Probably still.
No, I didn't see you, I don't think, till the Sunday.
Oh, then maybe by then it was resolved.
That's what I'm thinking. I think it must have been resolved, because I don't remember you telling me about that at all.
No, yeah, because by then, yeah, I went to bed and slept that night. I mean, still badly because I was sick, but because the thing is, that's part of why I had to queue for so long to get the judge's comments that day, because I knew otherwise, you know what it's like when something's not going right. It isn't even just in cake, in anything in life. You sit there in bed playing it over in your head. Was it because of this? Was it because of that? Was it because of this? And I think it would have killed me.
And it was so well done. That's what didn't make sense.
Oh yeah, thank you. It was. I mean, it had rough spots. I mean, to be sure. I got sick. There were things I meant to finish and didn't. Like where I put like a cap on the top. So like I said, I had the pastillage wall up against the brick wall. These poor people have no insulation whatsoever. But like. So on the top, it's obviously very rough with exposed bricks, the top of the pastillage, and you can sort of see like an imperfect gap in between. And so right. I should have had like one nice, clean cap on that. And by the time I got to that point, I was so tired. When I cut strips, I have one of those OXO herb mincer things.
Oh, yeah.
And so like that's I bought that again for the Wolverine cake because I was faking quilling on it. And so... that cuts strips really fast that are exactly the same size.
Right.
And so I looked at the wall and I thought, I'm going to need to measure this and I'm going to need to cut it evenly. And I don't want to. I'm just so sick. So I just rolled something out and I grabbed that OXO thing. And then, of course, it wasn't the right size. So I just put two and sort of squished them together. And it wasn't even. You know, it wasn't. Normally would I have done that for competition? No. But I was at the point of, I need to get this done and I hate my life and I'm so sick.
Oh, you poor thing. That's never good when you're in the middle of a competition piece.
No, it's not. And it happens to me a lot. I mean, there was one of the Austin years, I came with pneumonia.
Oh my word.
Oh yeah, we have a new rule now because the next year when we all sat down at the end, I said, you know, I'm tired. But I'm only just realizing how dead tired I was last year. Maybe we should have a rule that says if one of our volunteers has pneumonia, we physically block them from the building. Because you know if Kyla got sick, she'd still be there.
Oh, yeah. I sure do.
Yeah, I don't even know what kind of force of nature it would take to stop her coming, no matter how sick she was.
No, you're right.
So, yeah, I mean, I've been sick at a couple of our shows. I mean, because it comes in the winter, and then allergies in Austin are about to hit, so... You know, we always have someone who's ill, and it's no fun. And they show up anyway, and they do their work.
Yeah, because we're all crazy.
We're all crazy. We're all wonderfully dedicated people. That is the spin we will put on that.
That's right.
I mean, because the thing is, if you were that sick and doing a client cake, you'd have to stop. Because that's not even up to health reg at that point.
Exactly, but... I guess we figure it's styrofoam and there's people relying on us. And when you know you've got hundreds or thousands of people coming, can't back out and let them down.
No, and you've been planning that piece, I mean, sometimes for ages. I don't know about you, but as the day they tell me what the next Austin theme is, my brain's already cooking.
Isn't it science?
It's science this next coming year, yeah. Like, and everyone's like, oh, did you put in the ringer? And I'm like, I don't even do show cakes. What are you talking about?
But that's so your theme.
I know. I had to actually, because there's one of the other years that I went, when I was still in town, I think it was when Robin was a baby, and I had an idea for a science cake, like a science of the ages and all these figures, because that's my thing. I'm always going to do tons of figures. And I had a great idea for a cake, and it's like, now I think about, like, I don't think that would even make it to an airport, let alone through an airport.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, it's hard. You're too far away now.
Yeah, it's just, and I mean, yeah, I could create, I've seen like, you know, Heather Sherman, when she came in with her crate at this year's show and was carefully unwrapping her piece. Like, I'm aware that people can do this. They ship them, they crate them. I saw Benny posting his pictures of crating his piece up. But I mean, that's expensive within the U.S. I don't even want to know how much that would cost from England.
Right. It'd be a fortune.
It would be. And you know, there's being dedicated to competing, and then there's that's just not happening.
Then there's drawing a line with sanity.
Yeah, that's I have to draw it somewhere.
Yep.
It's clearly not in the don't start a podcast the week before your kids are on a 2-week break.
It's funny. No, I don't know. I don't know where my line is.
That's very, very dangerous.
I haven't found it yet.
Oh, dear. Yeah, I was thinking earlier when you were talking about how you'd started with your entry was into this world was coming by the Wilton set. And mine was a similar path, having come down and having no green card and being bored. But the first book I picked up was Carol Deacon. And so she was doing like the little sculpty things. And I wonder how different things would have been if the first thing I'd picked up had been a Wilton kit and you'd picked up the Carol Deacon book.
Oh, I think the little sculpty book probably would have been put on the shelf.
Oh, it's just not your thing.
I just don't seem to have the knack for it. I try. Well, I can't say no. I can't say it wouldn't have. Like I said, maybe it might have changed. I don't know. But I think I was really drawn to piping almost right from the get-go. I don't know. It just seemed to... There's something to me about looking at a bag of sugar and some butter or some egg whites or whatever. And I just don't look at it like most normal people do. I look at it and I think, oh, I can make that into something 3D. And, you know, most people just look at it as, okay, I can do some borders or I can pipe some scroll work. But, you know, I'll pipe it on a wire and hang it just because I want to try to push it. I mean, my brain works a little differently. I just want to try to push it to its absolute extent and see what I can do with it. And I get super excited about new ideas and things like that that had to be very precise or very, I mean, yes, my piping is precise and whatnot, but I think I have a bit more lenience probably in what I do with my stuff versus, you know, you try to make a doll, for example, or a girl or whatever. It's got to have, you know, the five fingers on each hand and the length of the arm has to be like it would be on the length of a person. And you got to get all your proportions right. And to be 100% honest, I just don't have patience for that much. As I was saying, I know people say that, really, you don't have patience, but look at the string work and look at this. And I guess because that's something that it's like all of us when we all have our own wheelhouse and, you know, piping the strings or piping whatever, it just comes naturally to me. And I think it's because it's a repetitive motion. The thing about string work, it's one motion just over and over and over and over and over and over and over again. So it's, I find it very therapeutic for me personally, and I enjoy it. But there's times, you know, when I go to the other side of it where I'm trying to do the pressure piping or I'm trying to do things I hadn't tried before that, you know, I am trying to push it more and you get frustrated or whatever. But I find modeling is such a precise, like, thing of it. So it's got its own entity and sort of thing. And I don't know, I get frustrated when I can't get it to work out.
See, and I could use those same words flipped around that for me, modeling is just, I can model something in the air with my hands right now and know I'm bad with proportions for humans. So what I do, and I've been doing this for years, I put this on the blog in that fondant figure 101 thing, which is like my biggest hit on my blog ever. And awesome. I have a little figure there that you can print out and it's just like a sort of generic little human and you can size it to whatever you want. And I will literally lie the pieces I need on there. Nope, that leg is too short. Because I have a tendency to work from the feet up. And then the feet are too small and the head is massive. But if I put everything on that printout, I will be even every time. Whereas if I pick up a piping bag, trying to get two lines the same is one is going to come out wiggly because I'm trying to match the first one.
Oh,
yeah.
Interesting.
So clearly we need to collaborate on a cake. That's clearly what
it is. Yeah, I think that's kind of what it sounded like.
I will model and you can pipe because every time I pipe, I can feel that I did piping today and I did not do very much piping. And I know you have, I should get you to list out your tips for how to not make your hand hurt, but my hand hurts anyway. But then my hand hurts if I knit. I think I'm just, you know, almost 45 years old. My hand's just going to fall off anyway.
No, I think it's more that you haven't created that muscle, that type of muscle movement and muscle memory in your hand. And, you know, sure, if I didn't do it, I probably wouldn't, mine would probably hurt too. But you know, it's like when, if I was to roll and cover fondant, like cover cakes for long periods of time, my goodness, you can tell I don't do it that often anymore because my shoulders and my arms, everything gets so tired. But my hands, because they're conditioned, it's like, you know, you do all the little modeling with your fingers. And I find my fingers get tired when I'm trying to work small bits of paste because it's just not a movement that's natural to me. Right. So it's the same thing. I mean, it's just that we use different mediums, so we've got different muscle memory created with our hands.
Yep, I think you're probably right. Although, could you tell the listeners what you have really good tips on how to minimize the hand pain when you're doing a lot of piping?
Yeah, sure. I mean, there's a few things. First of all, you look at what type of bag you use. And there are three types of bags. There's the parchment cones, which you make with the parchment triangles. There is the single-use disposable bags. I would say throwaway bags. And then you've got the vinyl or the featherweight bags. And most people who are traditionalists and love oral icing know that the traditional way is to use parchment. This girl right here absolutely despises parchment. I don't use it. I only use them ever if I pipe chocolate or if I am going to do flood work, because then I just throw them in the trash. I find they actually they can lead to a lot of hand pain. Personally, I'll explain that in a little bit. The disposable bags, they're great for single-time use. The reason I don't care for them is I find them very sharp. The seams are very sharp on my hands. And also, the more you use them, the tighter you twist your bags, the less pressure it takes out of your hand. And anyone who's ever used those bags knows that if you keep twisting them, they eventually pop or they get a big bubble on the side of them because they stretch. So it's not really helping your hand. My preferred bag is definitely a vinyl bag or a featherweight bag. And because the tighter you twist them, they can't stretch, they don't move. I can literally twist them enough that I don't even have to squeeze. Like, there's enough pressure in the bag itself. And I also have quite hot hands, and I find it makes my icing last longer. So when I was talking about the creating the problem with your hands, you should never have more icing in your hand than that could fit in the palm of your hand. All four fingers should wrap around that piping bag. You should always squeeze with all four fingers. And you can test that theory by just making a fist right now with your hand and squeezing with your four fingers. You should feel that in the largest muscle in your forearm. And if you're using parchment, you can only put 1 to 2 tablespoons of icing in a parchment bag. So you tend to hold those bags like a pencil. And if you take your hand right now and put your thumb against your first two fingers and squeeze, you're going to feel that on that little muscle going down the side of your thumb to the left side of your hand. That's what causes carpal tunnel. So you're actually causing more damage and stress on your hand. Too little icing, I honestly think, is probably worse than too much. Because like I said, you've got to go down to squeezing with those two fingers, and then you start concentrating on the little muscles in your hand, which are not meant for long-term use. And that's why a lot of decorators tend to get carpal tunnel, is they're just not doing the right thing. They're either using bags with way too much icing, and then trying to squeeze, you know, 4 cups of icing through it like a tip too. It's not natural. It's not going to happen. If you have something comfortable, it fits in the palm of your hand, you can use your whole hand to squeeze it. You're utilizing the larger muscles in your arm and not damaging the small ones. So make sure you really pay attention to how you're squeezing the bags. Make sure you're using your whole hand and not just your two fingers.
I mean, I've never successfully made a parchment bag that didn't fall apart because I don't want to fuss with that little thing. If I'm going to do it, I want the tip. I find that the control of the tip makes me happy. Today for the girls, I just had so much icing those bags because, you know, they're kids, right? But I've learned working with kids, I was using the disposables, but I did that, you know, that plastic wrap burrito method inside.
I've heard of that, yeah.
Yeah, so where that works for kids is it's giving that extra control pressure. And then I tie a knot in the burrito, feed it down through the coupler and snip it off. And then I get it all nice and snug in there, and then I twist the top and put an elastic band around. And so when I do stuff with kids, I can give them the beautiful giant bag of icing that makes them happy. Kids are never squeezing down. I mean, Peo, because she's 11, she knows now to squeeze down. Most kids squeeze up, so you need to fasten the ends of the bag, or it's all coming out the top. And by having that extra layer in there, it also then means when they get... You know, because yeah, with the coupler, you can change tips, but now they want a different color. Like, it's as kids, they just want it different, or just means you can, it's like almost like a cartridge that you can pop in and out. For my own piping, it's not my favorite way to go. I do like the featherweighty type bags best, but I definitely have to clean those because they're expensive relative to the
yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, as I'm an environmentalist, I prefer not to throw plastic away. I will wash a disposable bag if I think it's clean enough. You know, like, you only get 2 or 3 times out of them before the coupler is going to chew the end. But I will wash it, particularly if it just had royal in it. I know we've both talked before that as soon as you put buttercream in a bag, you can never put your royal in there again. So I marked mine with a Sharpie B. That means this has had buttercream.
Yeah, because like all of mine, I mean, I only use Royal. I would never put buttercream actually in a vinyl bag because it's just messy to clean up. I usually just never use vinyl for buttercream. I've always used the disposables for that. If you're someone who does like them for both, yeah, definitely put a mark on them somehow. Like I said, either you wrote a letter on there, you could just put a colored dot, whatever. Just make sure you keep buttercream for buttercream, Royal for Royal, because you'll never get the grease out of that seam.
This is the thing. The tips aren't supposed to rust, and if I'm bad about washing, because I hate washing tips, then I've learned, no, you got to wash it. I got to wash the tips the kids use today, tonight, and I got to put them on a towel to dry overnight, or else they're going to rust.
Well, I mean, I use mine sitting in, I've left mine sitting in water for a few days at a time. The key is just make sure they stay submerged in the water.
Yeah, I guess, yes.
Partials, that's when you get issues. But yeah, you also don't want to be leaving the icing in it too long. I generally let mine sit in warm, soapy water, usually for at least a full day. But it's easier with Royal. Like I said, it melts and I don't have to worry about it so much with the buttercream.
Yeah, it comes out pretty easily. I mean, it's just the small amount in the tip. Although, like I said, I'm not sure I'm looking forward to cleaning that. I don't know the numbers. The drop tip, the drop flower tip that's got that pin in it. I'm going to have to really get in there and clean that out.
If you run, you could just run it kind of like run your tap with nice warm or relatively hot water. Just run, it should just come right out. Okay. I've never had any problem cleaning them.
Okay, I just looked at that and I'm like, oh, this was a good idea until it wasn't. Oh, well, anyway, so what else have you got planned coming up that the listeners need to know about?
Well,
you've talked about your travel, but I know you've got your Royal icing line. Where can people get that?
They can order it from either the Cake Decorating Co. in the UK. They're actually my distributors, so that's where it's made out of. I try to have some here in the U.S. whenever I can. We're working on a distributor over here. So they can actually go to my website, just dawnparrot.com, and request it from me there, as well as my turntables. They're sold also on my website as well. We make a custom turntable that's not just for string work. It's actually a turntable that tilts on three different angles as well as keeps it at 90 degrees. And it has brackets that will hold your cake from a 3-inch size to a 16-inch diameter. And it can hold very, very heavy. I think we put 40 pounds of fondant on it and it still spun perfectly. So you can take a look for those. Let's see what else. Then, of course, you know, we're getting ready for OSIS. So the Oklahoma State Sugar Art Show is in October. Never miss that one. And then I'm really hoping to make it back over for the NEC. So that's something I'm trying to get working on right now. Other than that, I'm just trying to take a little bit of time for the summer. I've got a child getting ready for college, another one getting ready for high school. So we, you know, hopefully be able to do a little family stuff throughout the summer. And I'm hoping to create some new items and some new ideas for stuff we can do in the cake world. And see where it goes from there.
And people who want to see you on a regular basis should subscribe to your, or not subscribe, I guess friend you on Facebook. You've been doing the lives more on your personal page than your business page, I think, lately.
Well, I usually do them on the personal page, but then share them to the business page.
Right.
I found I was just getting more people watching them on the personal page. So usually what I'll do is film them on the personal page and then go ahead and just share them afterwards to the business. But yeah, they can either follow me there or just keep checking the business page, which is Cake Instruction by Dawn Parrot. And like I said, I will put them there as well. Because even if you're not watching it live, they're always posted, so you can watch them after. I still get the alerts if you put a comment on there, so I'll answer your questions. But yeah, I try to do them once a week. Unfortunately, with travel, sometimes that kind of switches things up and makes it a little bit hard. But I'm going to try to start trying to film a few things when we travel, maybe even be interviewing or getting one of my other friends. Like, you know, I'm traveling with my friend Jackie Kelly to Miami, and so hopefully I can maybe convince her to film a live with me and show you all some little tips and tricks on modeling so you don't always have to listen to just piping work. And we'll see who else I run into down there at the show, and maybe we can just, you know, continue to keep showing you some different things that they all can add to their work and make their cakes a little better and a little more well-versed.
That'd be awesome. I'll put a link in the show notes to so people can find you on Facebook to follow that. And you know, it's been a quest of mine. I'm so glad you came and did this. We were trying to get Jackie on at the same time because I think having both of you on at the same time will be a hoot and a half.
Yes.
So definitely, hopefully when you have a break at some point in the summer, and maybe Jackie will have a break too. I don't know if she's allowed breaks.
I don't think she is.
No, I think there was a thing recently at one of the, because all the NEC shows going on, and I said, "Oh, do you want me to come? I might come down for the Sunday of the Alexander Palace one, but do an interview at the end of that." And she's like, "They don't let me do anything else." I was like, are you working or are you actually enslaved? Do we need to stage an intervention here?"
Yeah, they work her pretty good. She's kept pretty busy.
Yes, because she's amazing and we love her.
Absolutely.
But if I get to get you guys both on the show, maybe in a few months, that I think, maybe even after you've been to Australia and hopefully not been poisoned by all the diddly snakes and spiders.
Oh,
I'm married to an Australian. I'm allowed to make fun. I'm a Canadian married to an Australian who was born in New Zealand. We both lived in the US and now we live in England. We're so Commonwealth. We're allowed to joke.
That's right. But yeah, but we don't talk about the poisonous things because they're really truly not there. So we just don't talk about
it. Okay, that's true. That is true. They're all gone now.
That's right.
They fixed that.
That's what I'm sticking
to. It's just bears and wolves.
Yep. I can handle that.
Because we're Canadian and so we're cool with bears and wolves.
Yep. Bears, wolves, moose, whatever. I can handle all them.
We have special Canadian calls.
Oh, we do?
Yes. I made that up. It's because it's getting late here. We're getting a bit punch drunk. So probably I should let you go. But I'll put show notes so people can follow the lives because they really are great. And they, you know, I've been learning a lot from them. I'm usually cooking dinner when they're on, or I'm sitting in the living room and my kids come and watch. And, you know, your design stuff where you've been talking about, you know, segmenting the cake and balance and stuff. I've seen my older one really noticing that. And maybe she's only applying it to Minecraft right now, but, you know, it matters. And I can definitely see the wheels turning.
Right, well, that's what matters. Yeah, I'm glad you're enjoying it. Like I said, I'm getting good feedback. So as long as people are enjoying them, we'll try to keep doing them.
You rock it.
Well, thanks, Sister Fran.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for coming on. And I hope the thunderstorm eases up for you guys.
Yeah, me too. I could do without some rain for a while. I'm dying for these pieces to get dry so I can assemble it.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was one of the things I said in the pilot, the things of, you know, trying to encourage people, and one of the examples I gave was just when it's 2 o'clock in the morning and your petals won't dry.
Yep. Well, these things just seem to be taking forever, and I'm not too happy with them, but that's all I can do. I got about half the pieces released, but all the major flood pieces are just taking forever to dry. It was raining a little bit yesterday, and now we're having a good storm today, so I just had to wait and get them done, but I'm trying to get them. This picture needs to get out ASAP, so...
Well, I will waft you some dry English weather, which is like the first time anyone said that ever.
Right, I was going to say, that's kind of interesting.
I live in Cambridge. It's kind of like the arid part.
I didn't even know there was an arid part. That's good to know.
It's not very arid. it's arid for English.
Right?
Anyway, really should let you go, and I appreciate this so much. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Anytime, my friend.
Have a good one.
You
too. And in case two Canadians talking about cake isn't enough, here's a third one.
Hey, I'm Mark. You're doing a great job with those cakes. Make sure you're using great colors, great flavors, and keeping your art as colorful and bold as you are.
That was Marc DeGrosier from Morsels by Marc in Quebec, recorded at the Austin Show. I've got a full interview with Marc and some other tidbits from that show that I'll sprinkle into future podcasts because, come on, we all love sprinkles, right? So stay tuned, and as Marc said, you are doing a great job on whatever you've been working on for this last hour. This has been the Eat the Evidence podcast. A warm thanks to all of my contributors, and if you'd like to hear your voice on the show or you want to discuss anything you've heard, get in touch with me on Facebook at facebook.com/eattheevidencebykimberlychapman, all one word. Or go to eattheevidence.com/podcast, remembering to put dashes between the words, so it's eat-the-evidence.com/podcast. The show is also on Twitter at Eat Evidence. If you've got Kim Chapman friended on Facebook, you can leave me a voicemail message there to record your very own cake formation, funny story, talk about a challenge you're having or have recently overcome, or rant about something driving you crazy. This show was produced and edited by me, Kimberly Chapman. Show notes and music credits can be found at the Eat the Evidence website in the podcast section. Thank you so much for listening, and remember, you are an amazing artist, and everyone involved with this podcast supports you. You can do it! Until next time, bye-bye, and good luck with whatever you're working on.